Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for March 24th in the year of our Lord, 2022. This is indeed our two in the goal, always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country, and to do so in the traditions of our founding fathers. We use the blueprint for liberty, the Constitution for the United States of America. We believe in the checks and balances. That's one of the great peaceful solutions we still have at our fingertips. And most importantly, you know we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. I am Sam Bushman, and today we've got our buddy Pete Sepp with us. He is president of the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. He's been with us for a long time, doing such a wonderful job, telling the tale of liberty, motivating people across the country, locally from your most local precinct / county through your state all the way up to the federal government. And they even work with international organizations to reduce taxes and create tax accountability everywhere, ladies and gentlemen. It's really a critical role they play. All right. He's the president of the National Taxpayers Union, NTU. And the National Taxpayers Union is the voice of America's taxpayers, mobilizing elected officials and citizens on behalf of tax relief and reform. NTU.org. Pete, welcome back, my brother.
Always great to be here, sir.
So much to talk about, so little time, and with, I pray not, but war shenanigans on the horizon, or at least rumors of war and economic sanctions and everything else. Has that jettisoned tax reform in America today, or are we still on a task to accomplish something?
We absolutely are. And of course, with war, unfortunately, does bring fiscal considerations. I mean, going back to the American Revolution itself and the Continental Congress attempting to raise funds for the war and get contributions from the states all the way until today, when we're having emergency and supplemental requests for providing military and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Taxpayers have a role to play in this, whether they wish to or not. And it's important to make sure that even in times like these, and especially in times like these, governments spend money wisely. And I hate to say it, and this is certainly with all respect to those who have served our country in uniform. In fact, many of them tell us this very same thing, that the military area of spending could definitely use a lot more oversight and a lot less waste. And so now's the time when we especially have to make this money count.
I agree. We need to make it count. And I agree, it's a very complicated landscape. And my goal isn't to dig into war here, because I pray we don't have war. And I'm not really trying to pick sides with Russia or Ukraine. I'm not trying to pick sides with Republicans or Democrats. But from a tax analysis point of view, whenever war and rumors of war, whenever sanctions happen economically around the world, it will take a toll on the United States coffers, whether you like it or not. How does that fit into the thinking of Congress and the relationship that we have to influence them, Pete?
Oh, a whole lot. I mean, we clearly, the agenda of tax reform, tax cuts, a better, more responsive, customer-centric IRS that respects our rights, all of those things are important at a time like this. So is federal spending and public input is what's needed right now. It's very easy for us to say, well, my call or my email doesn't do any good, especially at the federal level. There's nothing I can do to stop the march of bigger government, whether we're in peacetime or wartime, it doesn't matter. No, it always matters, and it's particularly important now.
And let me tell you why I bring that up and spend so much time on that, ladies and gentlemen. You know, they always tell you with the economy, whenever the stock market's down, people are thinking, oh, my gosh, I better sell. And they always say, no, do the opposite of what everybody thinks, whatever your gut or what, you know, do the opposite, because that's what really makes you wealthy. Well, that's the true with this reality. At first, you think we're possibly at, you know, war and rumors of wartime. We're at an all-time low in terms of our support for the president. The media is getting raked over the coals. The Republicans and Democrats are fighting. You think this is the last, this is certainly not the opportune time to make a difference or do something here. Nobody's eyes on that ball. But I submit to you just the opposite is true. Everybody's eye is on that ball, because if we do have war or rumors of wars, as we do sanction and we do say we're not going to take oil from Russia, or as we do all these different things, I'm not here to politically get involved or take sides right now. What I'm here to say is it affects government coffers, and it affects your taxes, and it affects your life and you. And right now, believe it or not, people's minds are more on this than you can possibly imagine. And Congress is listening like nobody's business, because at some point they've got to navigate this economic situation. And at some point they've got to deal with, hey, we're going to have less money in the coffers, and the average American won't be able to contribute as much. It's that simple. And they're going to have to navigate that, even on Biden's watch, Pete.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, of course, the events going on in Ukraine, the Russian invasion of that country, that's one contributing factor to the price inflation that we're experiencing right now. Many other factors are directly policy related. The poor choices of politicians not to use our energy resources and steward them wisely, and rather just to shut them off. That's been a problem and a contributing factor to energy price inflation.
And I would submit that's a huge mistake, too. We can do so responsibly, and we need to move forward and set aside political agendas. And we need to do that, because, look, why should we be dependent on other powers to our detriment? It's really that simple of a discussion, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. The fact that we were able to develop technologies like horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing that have allowed us to responsibly unlock oil and gas resources and become a gas exporter for the first time in recent memory during the late 2010s and into 2020 and beyond. Well, we shut that off through conscious choices of policy, and at the worst possible time, we have to try and reverse that and get supply back into the system so that prices can come down a little bit. We never should have gone down this road in the first place. It was very easy for Joe Biden to say, okay, I'm a committed environmentalist. We need to wean ourselves off oil and natural gas. We're going to take it slow on the development of energy, but we're not going to reverse some of the projects that were begun, like the Keystone XL pipeline. If he'd said, okay, we're going to stop building these pipelines from now on, but we're going to keep things going the way they are, and we're not going to reverse course. If he'd even done that when he came into office, we would be in much better shape than we are now.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. And again, there are things that relate to this that we can make a difference on by being aware of and focusing on it. So like I say, strike when the iron's hot. Right now, they're literally thinking about all these issues because they've got to navigate them. They've got to respond to them in meaningful ways. And that's when you and I can have a tremendous ability to be the one to provide guidance and support, not panic, not meltdown, not crazy criticism, but literally steady, well-thought-out ideas, suggestions, policies, plans. We can put them forth. I'll give you some examples to make the point. On the NTU.org website, there is an article written by Andrew Wilford that says this: where things stand on the ARPA tax cut. It's a state tax cut provision. What does that even mean? Most folks don't even know what that means, Pete.
Well, it's a very interesting provision of the American Rescue Plan Act. That was a COVID-related spending package that the Biden administration proposed and many Republicans and Democrats in Congress tailored. It was a follow-on to the CARES Act package. So this ARPA was passed in 2021, and there's a little provision in there that effectively says to states that if you accept aid from the federal government, you cannot directly or indirectly offset any reductions in revenue from tax cuts with any of the aid you get, and perhaps even beyond any aid you get. This provision was written so vaguely. What it's doing is exerting a chilling effect on states that either took very little aid or took a little more aid but want to cut their taxes further because the economies are growing in certain parts of the country, and they're seeking legal guidance. And unfortunately, the U.S. Treasury, the Biden administration's folks, are saying, oh, don't cut any taxes at all. That's our guidance. Well, that's unacceptable. And in many cases, other parts of the guidance are so vague, they don't know what to do. We're clarifying it in court. We could talk about
that. We're going to talk about it more. We're going to let Pete pick this up on the other side and really explain it to you, ladies and gentlemen. He called it a little provision because it's tiny in terms of legislation, in terms of how much ink it took to write it. But it's gargantuan in its repercussions. Pete Sepp will talk more about this in seconds. NTU.org, you are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com. The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Decades after Jimmy Carter, Joe Biden picked up where he left off. With America surrendering to terrorists, Biden's foolish spending is causing inflation, which means more pain at the pump, higher prices on groceries, devaluing your retirement savings when you need it most. Once was a mistake. Twice is a disaster. America needs strong leaders, not weak ones. Save America JFC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Live and on your radio, ladies and gentlemen, Pete Sepp of the National Taxpayers Union riding shotgun on the broadcast today. We're talking about, you know what, you think that so many things are going on, nobody can focus on reducing taxes. And I couldn't be more in disagreement with that. Quite to the contrary. The fact is everybody's worrying about taxes. Everybody's worrying about revenue and the coffers of government and everything. How are we going to navigate all this? So we have a lot of opportunity, and we're discussing where things stand on the ARPA state tax cut provision. The government, federal government, is trying to kind of mandate nobody cut taxes. Because if you took a little bit of cocoa revenue or cocoa money there, the bailout money, then they want to try to control you. There's the stick and the carrot, huh, Pete?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Sam, you and I have talked about this on probably 20 or 30 broadcasts. This is another reason, reason number umpteen, for states to be careful about taking federal money. Once they do that, they can be coerced into doing all kinds of things that are bad for their own taxpayers. Now, there have been court cases that have upheld the federal government's prerogative to attach strings to aid to states. But this is the interesting part. So when you go back to 1987 and South Dakota sued the federal government saying, you can't take away 5% of our highway aid just because we're not going to raise the drinking age to 21. That was
so. Let me stop you there let me stop you there for a second to kind of back into and explain what you're saying, Pete, because what you're saying is absolutely spot on, but I want to make sure people connect the dots properly. The idea is, yes, courts have backed this idea that they can create a stick and a carrot, and they can put strings attached to money they hand out. But now the point is, yes, you can put strings to it, but only relatable strings. You can't just across the board do anything you want to unrelated programs, to unrelated expenditures, to money that's already been allocated and agreed to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
Yes, absolutely. There are really three things the federal government has to do if they want to attach those strings, create a stick and carrot situation. They can do so only if the funds are related to a federal project or program, the condition is unambiguous, and the condition is not coercive in nature. It's called the anti-commandeering doctrine. The federal government has some authority here, but it only goes so far. And we believe, as well as a number of state attorneys general, that they went too far in this ARPA bill by saying you cannot use any aid if you are indirectly or directly cutting taxes. That is way too ambiguous. It is not necessarily related to a federal project or program, and it sure is coercive. So not surprisingly,
and the third one, the third one, Pete, not only is it coercive, not only is it not related to a federal program, depending on the way they cut taxes, but what was the third one?
And the condition is not unambiguous. In other words,
and when you say direct or indirect, it's so ambiguous, so broad, so confusing, they want you to believe that it relates to everything. And anybody who does anything could subject themselves to prosecution. This is where it's
right.
Hostile and vague.
That's right. And I will tell you, there is prima facie evidence that the Treasury itself knows that they are in trouble, because they tried to issue guidance saying, the states asked, we asked as part of our legal project, well, what do you mean, Treasury and federal government, by directly or indirectly? They gave us 151 pages of guidance that has still left the situation confused. Clearly, they don't know what those words mean.
And I mean, when you go to court, words, definitions are all reality. In fact, it's so much so that this lady going to the Supreme Court, when she was asked to define woman, she was afraid to even define the word woman. It's that. I'm not here to go off on a tangent, but I'm here to articulate before the courts, those words absolutely matter, and they know it, Pete.
Yes, and the federal government is losing. This is something that taxpayers, through National Taxpayers Union's legal arm, Taxpayer Defense Center, are helping to challenge in court. There are six lawsuits by various states that are affected by this, West Virginia, Kentucky, Missouri, Texas, Arizona, Ohio. They have taken the federal government to court to say, you still haven't cleared this up. We want to exercise sovereign tax policy, and you're standing in the way of it. We have won four out of those six lawsuits so far at the district court level. Two of those suits were dismissed because of standing issues, not on the merits of the case, and they're on appeal. That means the federal government is losing big time so far in this process, but we've got a long way to go. One of these cases is going to get to the Supreme Court, and we need to have all our resources ready to make our best argument to be sure that this law is struck down.
And I think the appeal should go forward, because how do you say there's no standing here? How do you say that when you're literally restricting a state what they can and cannot do independently? And the standing thing, how do you not have standing? I don't understand. I don't even understand that.
Yeah. Well, one of the cases that I read the opinion on basically argued from the court's standpoint that the state did not have standing in the Arizona case, for example, because Arizona still had a tax cut legislation in the legislative process, and it hadn't ripened enough. So the state can't claim that they're trying to proceed with tax cuts quite yet and are affected by the law. Well, it has since advanced, and the argument is fatuous anyway, because if states are reluctant to proceed because of this law and nothing happens, how can a court say, well, nothing's happening, so you're not affected? That's a circular argument.
Well, and then I would also say this: if they're not affected then and they don't have standing, that alone gives them the ability to proceed and say, no, if we don't have standing, then that law doesn't affect us. There's a point to be made there, yes. Too, Pete.
Yes.
Either I have standing because it affects me, or if I don't have standing, then it has no effect on me. And by the way, just so you know, and I'm not really an attorney or anything like that, but I have a decent legal mind. Here's what I would say. It is true that it doesn't affect the state, because the federal government can create any mandate they want to. But the states don't have to obey federal mandates. In fact, if you go look at the Sheriff Richard Mack case, where Mack beat Bill Clinton at the Supreme Court over the Brady Bill, in that court case, Antonin Scalia literally wrote, look, there's dual sovereigns here, and there's jurisdictional separations, and the federal government has no authority to demand the states do anything. And so there you see, that's one of the greatest 10th Amendment cases ever rendered in American history, because it said, look, the states have their sovereignty. So I agree, they don't have standing. And I agree that it has no effect on the states, even though the federal government wanted it to, even though the legislative body thought it might. And now the, you know, Treasury and everybody else, the courts are all wrapped around the axle on this thing. The fact is, the states don't have to obey federal mandates. Why? Because there's no jurisdiction. Pete Sepp.
Yeah. And, you know, the incredible part of this is that many states are proceeding ahead with tax reductions, generally along the lines of your own argument, Sam, that, look, clearly this law was written on the equivalent of a paper napkin at the last minute and stuck in the ARPA bill, and it was so ambiguous that the Treasury tried to clear it up with a 151-page memo, and that's only created more confusion. We don't feel ourselves bound by a dictate like this. And when you take a look at all of the states that have cut taxes since ARPA went into effect, Arizona, Idaho, Iowa, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Ohio, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin, and more are on the way, states are saying, we do have rights under the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, and they're not just rights granted us by the federal government. We are granting rights to the federal government. That's how our federal system works.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we have given different delegations to different divisions of government for different reasons, and this ain't one of them to the feds. Go read the list in the Constitution. Furthermore, if the government wants to say we have no standing, then we just simply say you have no standing either, as we nullify their unfunded, without authority, pretend mandates. Hang tight.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Lance Pride.
Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's Supreme Court nomination continues today in Washington. As Democrats praise Judge Jackson's record, Republicans are not making it easy for her. Senator Blackburn asked the judge to define a woman. Ms. Jackson said she couldn't, as she's not a biologist. Senator Josh Hawley, after pointing out her soft-on-crime stance, stated he can no longer support her nomination. It should be noted the Democrats can't put her on the Supreme Court without any Republican support because of their numbers in Washington. NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg spoke with reporters on Wednesday ahead of an emergency summit in Brussels, exactly 1 month after Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
We face a new reality for our security, so we must reset our deterrence and defense for the longer term. NATO leaders will reaffirm our support to Ukraine.
USA Radio News.
Not too long ago, it felt good to withdraw your cash from the bank, didn't it? For a vacation or a new car. But today, withdrawing your own cash has become risky. Pat Boone here for Swiss America. According to The Secret War, a new Swiss America white paper, I learned that all banks are now required to spy on you and me for the government, and then report any financial behavior deemed suspicious or unusual. You must read The Secret War. It's free.
Thanks, Pat. Call toll-free, 800-630-1490. That's 800-630-1490.
Truth is, I believe the government's new war against cash is really a war against us all. But the secret is now out. So please, get and read The Secret War.
Again, 800-630-1490. 800-630-1490. 1490 today
or at SwissAmerica.com.
The computer chip shortage around the world has Intel Corporation taking the offensive stance.
Shutdowns of factories during the COVID-19 pandemic, combined with high demand and unstable supply chains, have created a global semiconductor chip shortage. CEO of Intel, Patrick Gelsinger, tells Fox Business that they are investing in manufacturing to combat the shortage.
We're not just going to manufacture chips for our purposes, but we're going to manufacture wafers for the industry as well and become a major U.S. Foundry supplier, opening the doors of our fabs wide and something that we think is essential.
From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
Madeleine Albright, a child refugee who fled the Nazis, then rose to power to become the first female U.S. Secretary of State. She died Wednesday of cancer. She was 84 years old. Albright was a central figure in President Bill Clinton's administration, sharing praise from both sides of the aisle. USA Radio News.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the congressionally approved, signed by the president, ARPA state tax cut provision that I say literally has no effect on the states. And if the courts say we don't have standing at a state level, then, hey, that must mean it has no effect on us, right? I think we ought to take that to the bank, ladies and gentlemen, because that's the reality check. Remember, we delegated authority to different branches of government, and we gave them lists of what they can do. And the federal government, we said, hey, you got a lot of power in that 10-mile square up there in Washington. You got a lot of power in these limited list provisions defined in the Constitution. We're going to separate you at a federal level, too, because we're afraid you'll get out of control. So they locked them down pretty good. We just need to make sure that we're educated enough to uphold that reality. There's two questions left on this. Anything else we've overlooked on this ARPA reality people ought to know about, Pete, number one, and number two, is there anything we can do to help make sure that we get this right?
Well, just definitely to keep informed about the progress of these lawsuits, the National Taxpayers Union Foundation's Taxpayer Defense Center has several attorneys who are assisting other states and their attorneys general in making sure these suits advance through the court system with the best possible arguments. As I said, I think this is going to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's where the issue will have to be finally decided. Keep checking our website for updates, and God bless all of you for your support of these efforts. It shows that taxpayers can win in court when they're well organized and they're funded enough to keep this fight going throughout the process.
Amen. We really appreciate the leadership of NTU on these critical matters. And folks, don't lose sight of these important things that are happening when everything else is going on in the country and the media is driven by all these other things. Look, learn to tap into what's really happening in the country. And I'm telling you, this is one of the ground zero discussions happening right now. Now, I want to really recommend, though, look at that Richard Mack case where Richard Mack won over Bill Clinton at the Supreme Court, because it provides a lot of guidance about the federal government doesn't have authority to mandate to the states anything. That's really important. It's Prince Mack versus U.S., and Scalia wrote some incredible reality about dual sovereignty and everything else in there based on the contract called the Supreme Law of the Land, the Constitution. It's very well done and has real merit in what's going on right here, right now, Pete. That's just an FYI for you. The next headline I want to talk about is how Congress can boost ocean shipping. Brian, with this piece from your organization, doing a great job, Pete.
Oh, yes, indeed. This is in the practical realm of what we can do to address some of the supply chain disruptions that have cropped up not only on land, but at sea. I mean, we were treated to all kinds of photographs, the Port of Los Angeles with all of these ships just backed up, and San Francisco as well, trying to unload and offload their goods. Well, it turns out that there are many things that can be done in the here and now to try to speed up important goods that we trade with from other countries, as well as get more shipping capacity there to help bring more ships in and free up ports around the country, like Savannah, Georgia, and ports in Florida, to take on more traffic. Many of them already are, and they happen to be in states that offer good light touch regulations, low taxes, and a growing economic environment, unlike, unfortunately, what you see in California. Some of the proposals we have, we need to try and look at eliminating taxes across the board on the imported chassis that American truckers use to transport shipping containers. That could lower costs for them at a time when their fuel costs need to be brought down as well. That involves taking a look at the tax situation, the federal tax on diesel, the state taxes. Yeah, that creates other kinds of complications and headaches for the funding of roads. Right now, as a temporary measure, well, that might provide a little relief. There's also something called the Jones Act, which allows only American-flagged ships to transport certain goods between ports, not only ports abroad, but ports in the United States jurisdiction. Well, if you do a suspension, as President Trump did at one point for Puerto Rico when they were in trouble, you might provide a little more shipping capacity to get goods in and out at a more reasonable price. We also have to look at the dredging of ports and how companies ought to be able to come in more expeditiously. There are lots of regulations at many of these ports, especially in places like California, that make those things very difficult. So we need to take a look at providing relief from big government mandates and taxes. I know that sounds like a broken record, but unfortunately, mandates and taxes are the broken record, not those of us who are saying, stop that record from spinning and sing a different tune.
Amen to that. I don't want to be a broken record either, but I do want people to understand these are really the key issues going on in America, ladies and gentlemen. And what we need to do is jettison the mainstream narrative that, hey, all you got to worry about is you know, Russia and the Ukraine, or all you got to worry about is, man, you know, we're not going to have enough semiconductors for our computers or whatever. All those things have some validity and some truth. But look, how Congress can boost ocean shipping, one of the greatest ways is to get out of the way. One of the ways is to really realize that, you know, government doesn't need to solve everything. Oftentimes it's government involvement that causes some of these moral hazards in the first place, et cetera, Pete.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we also have to pay attention to your point, Sam, about those seemingly small opportunities that can actually have a huge impact. And that's something that my colleague Damian Brady recently pointed out regarding public comments on IRS tax forms. And this is a really underutilized area for citizens to provide information, not their personal information, but rather relate their experiences to the IRS about the time and effort it takes to prepare tax returns. This is law. The IRS has to accept this information. The Office of Management and Budget has to evaluate it, and they come up with what's called an information collection budget, meaning they tally up how much of a burden in time and out-of-pocket expense it is to complete the various tax forms. This is our chance to give realistic input so that maybe, just maybe, and I've seen this happen before, the forms and the processes will be redesigned because citizens are saying, this is crazy. There's a better way to do it. This process has worked, and it has led to even Congress getting involved and reducing the paperwork burden of our tax system. I wish we were at the point where we'd have enough support to repeal the 16th Amendment, not rely on this federal income tax system. We're not there yet, and until we are, we've got to do things like these to make the system less burdensome.
All right, there you have it, Pete. All I'm telling you is a lot's going on with taxes. Any final comments? I'm going to let you go a little bit early today, but any final comments that we ought to know about?
Well, folks just need to know that even at the local level, differences are happening. There was a court case recently that upheld the Great Taxpayers Bill of Rights in Colorado, that measure that passed in 1992, limiting the government growth of spending and taxes to the citizens' ability to afford it. And the government has to ask citizens for more money if it exceeds the limit of inflation and population growth. It's one of the best constitutional mechanisms against unfettered government growth that we have in this country. It's just been upheld in court, and that was born out of one citizen's idea at the local level to do it for his city. It went statewide, and it spawned other states to do the same thing. That's my point. One person out there listening to this broadcast who is willing to say, hey, it's up to me to do something as a taxpayer, made a huge difference.
Pete Sepp, God bless you and your organization, NTU.org. Thanks so much. We'll have you back soon.
My pleasure.
There he goes. Pete Sepp doing a phenomenal job with the National Taxpayers Union, always on your radio. Now we go to another dear friend we've had on the radio with us for literally over the last 25 years, Matthew Staver, well-known lead attorney with LibertyCounselLC.org. Welcome back, Matt.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
There is so much going on, I don't even know where to start with what's going on in the country. I say that because I'm getting emails from you on so many topics, but primarily these vaccine mandates, these forced mandates are out of control, and they literally have mandated all this, but they've also withheld, I'm going to call it exculpatory information? They've literally withheld the facts on this, knowing full well how damaging these vaccines are to the point of literally criminality. Mr. Staver, your thoughts?
No, they really have. In fact, the FDA got information from Pfizer with regards to their request for licensing their COVID shot. They had this information. They have a lot of information. They reviewed it in a few months. They then got a FOIA request to provide this information to the public. And they said, well, no, it's going to take us 75 plus years to do so. How about 500 pages a month, and it'll take 75 years? Well, many people will forget about it or be gone by then. The federal judge fortunately said, no, you have 8 months. How about 55,000 pages a month instead of 500? And so the very first group of documents that was released on March the 1st, you can now see why they want to hide this information. It's a document from Pfizer, 38 pages. It includes a nine-page appendix. It's single-spaced, nine pages. And it doesn't have any description. It just has the words of the actual condition, the disease, for example. 1,291 serious medical conditions that Pfizer knows about and have documented in just a period of a year of deployment with regard to...
I don't mean to interrupt. Say that number again, though, Mr. Staver. I don't even know how to understate this.
1,291. And you understand, like, when you buy a medicine at a drugstore and then you open it up and there's this sheet, you open it up, you see what's in it, and it gives you some of the possible reactions. It may say in sentence format, this may cause in rare occasions a rash, or it could cause in some occasions a headache. If so, stop using this medication, et cetera, et cetera, and see a doctor, whatever it may be. No, in this, it's not sentence format. It's just the word of the condition, like myocarditis, like neonatal death, and it goes on. One after another, they're all separated just by a single comma. So you can kind of get the massive amount in terms of what is 1,291 specific names of physical serious conditions. Imagine getting this COVID shot. Would you like to have the shot? Sure. Here's the list of adverse reactions. Well, it's nine pages, single spaced, not in sentence format, just a run-on. Comma after comma, just the name of the condition, the name of the disease, and you start reading those, and you say, oh my goodness, that's some of the side effects, and that has happened all in a year? Yes, but it's safe and effective. Don't worry about it. Unbelievable. Who would take something like that? That's why the FDA and the CDC don't want you to know this information. They're reporting false information, and they're withholding relevant information that we need to know about. In fact, we were in trial just about 2 weeks ago, and I had three flight surgeons that testified in our federal court case against the military regarding these COVID shot mandates. One of them is Dr. Peter Chambers. 2023 would be his 40th year in the military. He wanted to make it to 40 years. He's not going to make it to 40 years. He trusted the safe and effective narrative from the government as one of the six Green Beret doctors in the entire world, flight surgeon, Purple Heart recipient. He got all the vaccines up until the COVID, and he trusted the government, safe and effective. He didn't do his own research, unfortunately. He just relied upon the safe and effective mantra. So he took the Moderna shot. Now he's going to be disabled, retired this coming May, because he has demyelinization, which means the protective lining around your nerve is deteriorating. It's kind of like a cord, and you melt away the plastic on the outside of that electrical cord, and you just see the actual cord inside. Well, that will short circuit, malfunction that particular carrying of electricity in that cord. That's what happens to your nervous system when it demyelinates that protective lining around your brain and your nerves. That's what's happening to him. What an AK-47 in Afghanistan couldn't do to stop this Purple Heart recipient, the Moderna shot did. And had he known now, he said, what he now has studied, had he known that it was made with aborted fetal cell in the testing and development phase, had he known about some of the side effects, and by the way, that particular demyelinization condition is listed as one of those 1,291 conditions that Pfizer knew about, FDA knew about, and they didn't tell anybody, he would not have taken it, and he would make his 40th year and retire in 2023 rather than being forced to retire from a medical disability.
Now, this is hard to understand because the government, and I don't know if it's just the CDC, the FDA, I don't know how many government agencies are involved in this, but this military case is really exposing the truth of what's happening. They've lied from the very start. They've withheld exculpatory evidence. They have literally, and now in addition to all that, if that's not enough, now they're literally witness tampering, right, Matt?
Yeah. They are. In fact, in that same hearing the night before, where we were preparing for the hearing going over Dr. Teresa Long's testimony. She's a medical doctor, flight surgeon. She works with a lot of pilots. She also has a master's in public health at the request of her superiors to get that, and she's an expert in what's called the DMED, the Defense Medical Epidemiology Database, that logs all the medical treatment of all the men and women in the military. So she sees what's happening with regards to medical treatment. She did research between comparing 2021, when the shots came out, versus the previous 5 years, and found startling increases in neurological conditions, other kinds of conditions, miscarriages, myocarditis, pericarditis, you name it, a whole bunch of conditions. And she was called on 5 o'clock the day before we were going to have the hearing in federal court, and commanded, ordered by her commander, who said it came from above, so it had to come from at least a general or higher, not to testify the next day based upon the knowledge that she had. So when she was on the stand the next day and I questioned her, I asked her a question, she said, I've been ordered not to answer that question. The judge said, ordered by who? We began to explain what happened, how she felt intimidated, even threatened for her very life because of the information that she has and the command that she received. And then I said, is the information that you have relevant, and would it be helpful for this court to know that the Department of Defense doesn't want you to testify to? She said yes. She then paused. I said, why? Why is it relevant? Can you tell us? She paused for a few moments. She then looked at the judge. She held back tears, and it was shocking what she said. She looked directly at the judge, and she said this. She said, I have so many soldiers being destroyed by this vaccine. Not a single member of my senior command has discussed my concerns with me. I have nothing to gain and everything to lose by talking about it. I'm okay with that, because I'm watching people get absolutely destroyed. This is what they don't want you to know about.
Their goal, their motive is control, isn't it, Matt? They're not really interested in the vaccine. That's not even the discussion, right?
Yeah, it's control. And you know what I think it is? I think it's part of a bigger agenda by Biden and Secretary Austin, and that is to purge the military of people of faith, particularly Christians. If you go back into right after he was confirmed, he had made a statement, Secretary Austin, the defense secretary, that he wanted to, that the military needed to purge. He was referring to January 6th. There are some people in the military that support January 6th. Well, he's not talking about people that support, you know, violence. He's talking about people that have different political views that disagree with him and Biden. And he mentioned that it needed to be purged. He was questioned about that. This, I believe, is the way for the military to purge people of conservative Christian values under the guise of forcing the vaccine. It goes against all logic. Number one, we know, they know, that they're hurting their own military members. We know and they know that it's causing significant decline in morale and military readiness. They also know that it's not preventing the transmission of COVID. They also know that we're on the opposite side of the bell curve on the downward slope on Omicron. Even Hawaii took away its mask mandate, the last state in the union, but the military is still standing strong. Why? Why is this so illogical and yet they're still persisting it? Because I think it's a way for them to purge people from the military that they don't like that have conservative Christian values.
But Joe Biden literally has blood on his hands over this as well, because people are dying. And when they have this knowledge and people are dying and they continue to perpetuate this dishonest agenda and then shut us down saying we're peddling fake news, etc., they've gone beyond the pale in terms of the reality check on this one. There's blood on their hands now.
I believe there's clearly blood on Joe Biden's hands, no question about it, because the direction for the mandate has come down from him to the Secretary of Defense and then from there down to the military. They know that some of these people are being injured, many of them, by the way. In fact, there's more people we know from data, and this is indisputable, more people have died in the military from the COVID shots than from COVID itself. That's a fact. We know that from the data. We know how many people are reported to have died from the COVID shots in the military. We know how many people that they say have died from COVID in the military, from the military data itself. So they know. They know that it's hurting people. What these individuals testified to in our court hearing, they said that they know people who are being injured, that they're dying. They also know people who have committed suicide. We've got a chaplain who just gave a memorial service February 22 is when this young man took his life. He counseled the young man and recommended that he get the COVID exemption, but the pressure just continued to be on him, pressure, more and more pressure. Husband and wife, both military members, both of them filed for religious exemptions. They were being forced out. They would lose their incomes. Not only that, they would lose their career, and they would be blacklisted because they would be discharged without honor. They'd have to pay back their educational cost, any kind of training cost. It would bankrupt the couple. And unfortunately, this young man took his life. He's not the only one. We know of others as well. These doctors know of others as well. There is blood on their hands based upon these irrational, abusive mandates.
All right. It's not only the president of the United States, though. A lot of executive branch leaders are doing this, too. The Maine governor violates the laws with shot mandate as well. These governors are as out of control as the president are.
Yeah, exactly. Like in Maine, for example, New York, we're litigating there and other places around the country. In Maine, the governor, Mills, and then in New York, Governor Hochul said all the healthcare workers have to get the COVID shot. And you cannot entertain or accept a religious exemption. And in fact, any employer that grants a religious exemption to these COVID shots will lose their business license. So you have a hospital with several hundred people. You grant one person's religious accommodation request. And then what happens? The governor comes in and says, well, we're going to shut you down. You no longer have a license to operate your business. So it's putting incredible pressure on these employers, and so the employers terminated these individuals. These are people who worked through the pandemic. These are people who didn't have PPE at the early stages. Some of these nurses, for example, rented travel trailers, put them out in their yard. That's where they would sleep because they didn't know what they were bringing into their home to their families. They just didn't know. It was early on in the pandemic. These people are heroes, just like these military men and women, just like the pilots who flew and the, you know, flight attendants who flew people during COVID at the very height of it. And then they get forced to take this shot against their religious convictions or even against their medical contraindications. And if they don't comply, they're terminated. They're pushed out.
So
some of those are right
line.
There on the verge of retirement as well.
We've only got a couple of seconds left, Mr. Staver, and I want to make sure I get this question in. Are we beyond Nuremberg trials on this already?
I think we're in the Nuremberg situation with lack of informed consent. But you know what? We're going to fight and fight and fight to reverse this. We've been able to be successful on stopping some of these mandates, and we're going to stop this military abuse. For more information, you can always go to our website, lc.org.
Last question. Do you think we're going to – I mean, I know we've got some wins on this, but it seems like the government just keeps thumbing their nose and disobeying the law. I mean, now you've got another temporary restraining order, and more – the judge gets it on one hand, but yet the government just keeps belligerently going like a bull in a china shop, right?
Yeah, we're going to hold them accountable, though. They're not going to get away with this. I can tell you what. I mean, I these are things that keep us up on at night through the weekends because we're always thinking about this, working on it. But we're not going to rest until we get justice for all these individuals. These are defenders of freedom, and we are now defending their freedom. If they lose their freedom, we lose our freedom.
Amen to that. Matthew Staver, we just want to congratulate you on your successes. We want to thank you for the incredible work that's being done. We know that we need to financially support you guys at lc.org and do all that we can to help. Americans need to stand up all over the country and politely but insistently push back and say, no, it isn't happening. We need to encourage counties and states to nullify now and say, look, you don't have authority to mandate these things. Anyway, we're so grateful for you and all that you're doing. We just want to let you know we're out here. We know about it. We're grateful, and we're doing all we can to help.
Thank you, Sam. Great to be with you.
There he goes, Matt Staver, doing a phenomenal job, ladies and gentlemen. Well-known attorney. We've had him on the radio with us over the years, and every time he comes in and joins us on the broadcast, it's just incredible information and just stellar work by Liberty Counsel, lc.org. Well, that's a wrap, ladies and gentlemen. Hard-hitting talk always at your fingertips when it's Liberty Roundtable Live. That's for sure, right? All right. LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net. You've also got BrightyOnRadio.com. By the way, they're adding our Saturday show. Did you hear that? It's fantastic news. We'd like to thank all of you. Without you, we wouldn't even be here. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic.